Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host and business partner, Al McDonald. Al, thanks for joining me today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. And we're in a little bit of a new spot today, so excited about that.
Well, today we're launching something I think is really special. A new series where we sit down in person with some of the incredible leaders and entrepreneurs we've had the chance to connect with virtually over the last few years. This new series is all about going deeper. Having real conversations about how high achievers think about wealth, legacy, and impact. It's an opportunity to hear not just the what behind their success, but the why and what's next. I'm thrilled to kick off this series with someone who's made an incredible mark in the world of recruitment technology and healthcare staffing, the CEO and co-founder of WorkWolf and Magnus HRS, Eric Simmons. Eric, thanks for sitting down with us.
It's my pleasure, guys. Nice to see you again.
It's always good to see you.
Yeah.
Before we get started, I just wanted to say Eric's story is one of vision, perseverance, and constant reinvention. And today we're going to dive into what drives him, how he thinks about building lasting impact, and the lessons he's learned along the way. So let's dive into it. So Eric, as a driven entrepreneur, and I've had the pleasure of getting to know you over the last year, year and a half, and we've had many conversations. And I've seen you build successful companies, and you continue to do so. Mm-hmm. How has your definition of success evolved over that time? And maybe talk about beyond even the financial side of things.
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. And I think it's an evolution. And I think that it's a question that every entrepreneur kind of is faced with after they've achieved certain milestones that they set themselves out to achieve. And I think with the most successful entrepreneurs, that finish line always moves and it moves further and further away. Which is, you know, why you kind of set yourself up to like, you know, I'd love to do $1 million of revenue in my company. You know, then you hit it and then you're like, well, you know, that was tough, but I can do more and I'll need to do 10, right? And then it's like, well, I'd like to do 100. And the challenge, I think, is that no matter how far and how successful you become monetarily or in terms of recognition, there's always people, always, that are at next level. Right? You're at the top of kind of that small pond, and then you realize there's a whole ocean of small ponds out there of just bigger and bigger fish. And so I've had to kind of recalibrate what success is. And now that I have two young children and a wife that I'm very in love with, that I've been with for the last 13 years, married for the last 13 years almost, it's changing into my time. How am I spending my time? And being a guy who used to work 15 hours a day pretty consistently, 6 or 7 days a week, cutting that back to a reasonable amount and then spending that time with my family and building powerful experiences into my life with my family is one way. Also, in terms of how I interact with my people at work and my companies, I'm not so much the operator and I'm trying to be more of the service focused leader, which is sitting down, making sure everybody in the organization, whether it's, you know, one of my CEOs or whether it's a junior sales rep who's just joining us, that they felt heard, they felt included, and they know I've got their back.
So Eric, there's a lot in your answer I want to dive into. Mm-hmm. And the first place I'd like to start is, you know, you talk about achieving certain milestones and the people you have around you at that time. If there are other people, myself included, we're hitting certain milestones, and there's things that I used to dream about and write about that I now have in my life. Mm-hmm. And you want to continue moving forward. Like you said, that goalpost always moves. Mm-hmm. That goal always moves. What would be your advice to other entrepreneurs out there about finding the people that can help you do that? So, you know, maybe when you started, mm-hmm. you had a certain group of people around you at a certain level. Mm-hmm. And then you may have outgrown those people. And I don't mean that in a negative sense, but you've kind of surpassed your goals mm-hmm. and you want to get to those people at the next level. Mm-hmm. How do you go about doing that?
I think the majority of very successful entrepreneurs are all seekers, right? So they're all looking for answers to things that haven't been solved yet. They're looking for ways to grow themselves, grow their environment, and grow their impact. And so peer groups is something that I've been involved with since 2012, where I first joined an entrepreneur organization. And I'm actually still part of the same forum today. So there are elements about that group of entrepreneurs where we went rogue from EO about six years ago and kind of started our own forum because we weren't getting the value out of it, but we loved our forum. And it's become, you know, a support mechanism for our group. But then I've also joined other peer groups. So I'm a part of a group called Leadership Impact. And that's really value-centered leadership and bringing kind of, you know, theological, old school, even like Christianity into, and their values into your business, which is really just service-focused kindness, empathy, and listening. And how do we... You know, how do we breed that within our culture?
The other term that you used when you were giving your answer that just resonates so well for me, and I'd love you to chat about what that means to you, is creating powerful experiences. Mm-hmm. And when you're chatting about that, you mentioned your wife and your kids. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to hear about that, but I'd also love to hear how that applies to the rest of your life as well. Mm-hmm.
So when you're a grinder, like I am, you put your head down and you can come up and it's literally years later, right? And you're in the weeds, you're in the midst of it, you're driving towards goals. But if I look back at memories that I've had for, let's say, when I was launching WorkWolf or when I was getting Magnus out of a point where we were almost in bankruptcy, right? There's no happy memories there, like anywhere in my life, because the repercussions of the business and the challenges they had, they spread everywhere. With, you know, lack of time with friends or socializing, challenges at home as well, right? So when I'm talking about powerful experiences now, and, you know, you've built a certain amount of freedom and flexibility and wealth in your life, it's hard to change the programming to enjoy it, right? And so I have to have significant intent and conscious awareness of my default is to go down the road of pain, work, hustle, grind. And now I have to be aware of it and go to breathe, take care of yourself, which I have not done a good job of in the last, let's say, decade. I'm trying to get back to it now. Family and love and experience with the people that are most important in my life. And so, you know, taking vacations or asking your loved ones, what are their dreams? And, you know, my wife, kindly enough, says, like, you're a dream maker, right? You make people's dreams come true. That's a very nice compliment. And I think that's, if that was my legacy alone, that would be a wonderful legacy to have. But first, you have to know what their dreams are, right? So having those conversations with my family, even with my children, 5 and 7 years old, like, what are your dreams, right? Usually it's Disney. Right? It's not that complex. But I wanted, for example... with my daughter, I want to start a tradition of me and her going to New York for a weekend and seeing Broadway shows. So I took her and she was, you know, 7 years old and we went for a weekend, just her and daddy. We went to, I can't remember the hotel. It's like the Park Hyatt or something. One of the fancy pants ones that they shot Home Alone at, you know, yeah. Right by Central Park. And they had tea. Right. They have tea time. And what was interesting is the manager came over to me and she said, "You were one of the only dads that brought their daughter for tea time that we've ever seen. So always come over and thank you and congratulate you for taking this time with your daughter," right? And the amount of money for this tea would blow your mind. I'm not even going to say it. It's disgusting, right? but whatever, right? It's worth it. And it's immaterial in terms of, you know,
well, imagine that powerful experience that that is for your daughter. And I'll tell you a quick story because you brought up Disney.
Yeah.
And my mom recently passed away. And in the last year of her life, we were having these conversations. And I asked her, I said, do you remember going on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride at Disney? And I must have been seven. And she looks at me and she couldn't believe that I had that memory. And we had this moment. Mm-hmm. And again, when you said powerful experiences, I immediately thought of that. Mm-hmm. So when you're, I'm sure when your daughter's older and she's going to have such fond memories of, oh, I used to go to New York with my dad, or maybe she's going with her kids one day and thinking, hey, this is something that I do with my dad. So I love that you chatted about that.
Yeah.
Eric, you talked a little bit about impact and legacy, and I want to get to that. But before we do, you've talked a lot about, you know, what has changed and what you still want to change. I'm curious, what do you think changed in you? Like, do you think it's maturity? Do you think it's experience? Do you think it, it is family? Like, what do you think happened to maybe put more focus on some of these things that you're now focused on versus that grind that you talked about before?
Well, when you have children, it changes everything in terms of your outlook. But I think that, you know, I've been a constant reader, a constant learner. I don't write as much as I used to write. You had mentioned writing, Robin, that I think is really important for just to get everything out of your head and on paper. But I'd say what's changed in me, I was a pretty angry kid and a pretty angry young man, right? I was a fighter like you, Robin, and it was a great way to get out my aggression. I can't do that anymore, and I'm a little bit old, you know, to get in the ring. A couple of shots could really mess up my neck, right? Yeah, the bones aren't quite as flexible as they used to be, right? So I've really worked on being less reactive, okay? And so, and you know, I have a philosophy, and I came up with this in my 20s. It's this concept of the space between stimulus and reaction, right? And when we're in autopilot, which entrepreneurs are a lot of the time, right? We're endorphin-driven, like adrenaline-driven, go, 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 go. That is highly reactive, right? And so I believe that there is this infinite space in between stimulus and how I react. It's just being aware, right? And so that takes consciousness, it takes breath, and not being an autopilot. And so I've worked very hard over the last decade of being less reactive. And I still have executives that work for me who help me with that. And I'll still play with them. And I'm like, this is the email that I'm not going to write, right? Or this is, I'm just using you as my sounding board. And please have a laugh because I'm getting it out, right? Yeah. So I'd say probably reactivity is something that's really helped. It's helped me from self-destructing, to be honest, because I've got that propensity to grow it, tear it down, and then do it again. Right. So luckily, over the last decade, it's been grow it, don't tear it down, and keep growing it. Right. And I've had people to help me.
Well, not hopping in the ring is probably a good idea because I remember, Eric, early into my career, my best friend in jiu-jitsu ended up breaking my nose. And I had a sales appointment the next morning. So I show up with a broken nose, all swollen, of course, with two black eyes.
Yeah.
And I showed up and said, oh, it's just from martial arts. Yeah. Don't worry. Here's the present. Didn't get the case.
No.
Never. So probably a good idea to stay out of the ring at this point in your life.
Yeah.
Let's go back to a little bit about impact and legacy because you mentioned both of those before. So lots of business owners do want to build something that's going to last. Mm-hmm. So when you think about what you want to build and the legacy you want to leave behind, tell us what's important to you.
There's a few. So one is, you know, it's a one in a billion shot, right? Which is to build something that actually is disruptive enough to change a process that has existed for a long time. So with WorkWolf, my ambition with the technology company is to replace the resume, right? Where self-proclaimed resumes no longer need to exist because everyone has a digital work passport, which has their psychometrics, which can predict outcome in any number of jobs. It has all of the claims and all of the credentials on their resume verified by the issuer of that credential. And the individual controls the access of that information. They can't falsify it because of how it's stored. They can't tamper with it, but they can either grant or deny access to that information to a recruiter, to an employer, to a landlord, to anyone they choose, right? So it becomes this kind of source of truth, which is why WorkWolf's tagline is unleash the power of truth, because I truly believe that deceit or embellishment is the main friction point within the employment market. And if we can illuminate truth more in the process, that will make a dramatic change, right? And that's a valiant, that is a very, it's a good thing to bring truth forward. And I think that if we can rally enough people behind this, I mean, we've got close to 50,000 new digital work passports now going out every single month. Every month. And that's applicants coming through our system. So we're getting to a critical mass now where this thing can fly, right? But it's been 7 years of grind and work. Another impact is that's really important is with this group of guys in the Leadership Impact group that I'm a part of, we meet every Tuesday morning, 7:30. We went to Guatemala with an organization called Loving Arms. Mm-hmm. And they've got a school out there, and this woman, Linda, has been working on it for 15 years, started with a JK class, now has 350 kids at this school. So they're purely charitable, gift grant funded. So they don't have a lot of extra money. So the guys, we all went down, 7, 8 of us, and fixed the school, right? Just spent a whole like plumbing, like we're not really good at any of it, but good enough to get it done properly. So we did that for a week. And then Linda found out on the last day what I do for a living, or one of my companies, Magnus, right? She's like, how many nurses do you have working for you? I'm like, well, we have a roster of about 4,000 healthcare practitioners. She's like, would you want to bring some nurses down for a medical mission? And I was like, the school had such an impact on me because when they welcomed us, you had 300 kids cheering for the men that went there to help, right? And they prayed for us, and it was like there was not a dry eye in the house, including mine. So I'm like, as soon as she asked me, I'm like, done, right? I'll bring it. So I couldn't believe the nurses, because so we put out an email. There was more than 100 nurses that applied to come with us, right? And it was unpaid, right? So I sponsored for the hotel and the flights for all of our nurses, but they gave their time. Mm-hmm. And we were able to get through 100 of them and select 8 to go. And we treated close to 1,000 patients, and many of them who had never had healthcare, never experienced a medical practitioner in their lives. And we were able to treat them, and we had a pharmacy set up, so we were able to provide them medication and over-the-counter stuff. So that was, I mean, that's impactful.
Yeah.
That's something that many people in those villages will not forget. And I know the nurses won't forget it. They've already asked, could we do another one?
Yeah. Right. That's amazing.
Are you noticing a theme here, Al? Just in this brief conversation, powerful experiences. I'm sure you brought that to all of those people. Mm-hmm. And what did your wife call you? Dreammaker. Mm-hmm. Because the lady running that organization had a dream about what she wanted to bring to that community. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're noticing that theme with you, Eric. So that's I'm glad you shared that. Let's talk about success, because, like I said, you and I have developed a friendship, so I know about what you're doing and how hard you work, and I love having these conversations, because I know I'm going to leave here today with so much energy. And we met part of your team, and we joined you here today. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that as we're chatting and looking at our own company. And, you know, managing success, and I think especially at your level, requires not only a great team, but perhaps even some great mentors. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you to share, if you could, is there a philosophy that you carry with you to not only manage that success, but protect what you've already built?
Mm-hmm. I think integrity and character are paramount in leadership. Anyone at the top of the organization, any organization, it trickles down, and you can't hide who you are, right? So it comes across in your energy, and I'm a big proponent of energy and osmosis, whether it's good or bad, right? So checking yourself, humbling yourself, being penitent at the beginning of the day, for me, is essential. I'm working. My wife has such little time with me, and just even this morning, we're working on it, right? But we have busy lives, and we have, you know, multiple properties and lots of businesses going on, and she helps, and she's a partner in some of them too, right? And so when she has the time, I'm trying to, like, I've got the fire going in the morning, I'm trying to have my calm time, drink a coffee, and just kind of like not think about anything, right? And allow the creativity to come. And my wife sits down, she's like, okay, I got this, and I'm like, no. Please just give me some time, right? Just because I'd never get any time to just kind of be. it's all a blessing, but I think that the thing that I've made consistent in my business is that I'm here to serve, right? At every level, right? Which is first to serve my higher power, right? Which is what would my higher power have me do? And happy to go into that if you'd like to, but not necessary.
No, please do. I'd like to hear more. Yeah, I'd love to hear more about that.
You know, I had some early mentorship that was like, no matter how hard your decision is, Eric, make the right decision, even if it's the hardest decision to make. And for me, that was attached to character. That was attached to integrity, because sometimes the line is not straight, or it's blurred, right? But your gut kind of knows, at least mine does, right? Which is this level of consciousness, which is, I need to make the right decision based on how somebody else is going to be affected, right? So even if it's better for me, my ego, my pocketbook, if it negatively impacts somebody else, if I'm not lifting them, if I have to tear them down to lift myself, I'm not doing it, right? And that's really what I mean by higher power. Whatever I channel into is kind of like, what's the right thing to do today? How do I humble myself with all of your success, right? Or all of my success, to not think I'm better than anyone else, even someone on the street, right? How can I be of service to that person, whether it's a smile, a conversation, a coffee, a couple bucks, right? And I just think that if I can do that consistently every day, build powerful experiences within my companies and within my family, you know, I got the right formula.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking forward to our lunch where we can dive into it more. I want to go back a little bit, because you said you grew up as an angry young man.
We did this last time.
Yeah, but it's a good story, though.
No, I didn't want to talk about that.
Okay.
Because I guess my question is, does that angry young man, I can't imagine that sometimes it doesn't try and sneak back in.
Yeah. I had this conversation with my wife yesterday. He sneaks back all the time.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you get him back in the background again?
I think you don't try and get him back in the background. You let him be, right? And this will go to kind of psychology 101. If you suppress that part and you push it down, it comes back angrier, bigger, more aggressive, right? So how do you find this balance of multiple parts of your personality? I wouldn't say I'm schizophrenic, but I certainly have got something can switch in me, and my personality is entirely different than it was just a split second ago. Mm-hmm. And whatever that is, I'm not sure what it is, but I have to be highly aware of that. But I'll give another example with my wife, right? In terms of, you know, things that can be said that with no intent or with pure logic, and that's a big difference between, I think, men and women in general, is we are logical problem solvers, at least in my wife's, you know, more emotional feeling experiencers, right? And sometimes that's a shift for a driver to go to, well, there's nothing mm-hmm. that really needs to be solved here. You just need to be heard. And I don't do that well all the time. So it can create some conflict, you know, not just in my marriage, but in general. And so it's all what happens next, right? Just don't blow it up. Don't burn the bridge. Don't say something you can't take back or something you're going to regret. Then let it calm down to a side, because if both parties are very angry, nothing happens that's productive. So let it calm down and then have a conversation about it. And show your vulnerability. I've found that by showing my vulnerability during those discussions, I shed a tear, right? And I had a video podcast yesterday, and I had this conversation with my wife yesterday morning. And I'm like, honey, I can't cry because I'm going on film in the next like hour. So trust me, I'm feeling this right now, but I got to hold them back. She likes to see the tears, right? She likes to see that I'm sincere and that I really am feeling the regret or the, you know, the pain of what she's experienced through the challenge or the conversation, and that I get it. And I think people recognize I'm a pretty hard-shelled guy. I've had to be, right? And the challenge is, how do I take that shell away now that I don't need it anymore? Right. And that's tough, man. That's a big challenge.
Well, I love that. I love the answer. And I mean, the reason I asked is, I think we're all there, whether it's an angry young man or whether it's something that we just want to change, right? But it's as conscious as you can be to try and be a new way, it's easy to revert back sometimes, right? So I'm glad you shared that. And you said something that I too work with a coach, and to your point about trying to solve problems, that's what I try and do, right? Someone tells me something, I think, oh, I got to try and solve their problem. And their very good advice was, they're not looking sometimes for you to solve the problem. They're just looking for you to listen.
Oh, so, yeah. Unsolicited advice is one of my biggest pet peeves. People give me advice and I'm like, didn't ask
that
for it.
That wasn't really what I was asking about.
Yeah.
Eric, let's look ahead 10 to 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. What do you think in that future you want to leave behind in terms of, and this could be professional, it could be personal, business, like what is that you really want to see as something that you've left behind?
If I looked at what my purpose was, because I've worked with coaches as well, I still do, and I work with peers to kind of review these things that are fundamental to ongoing growth and to a life that has somewhat of a legacy, I kind of want to undo the intergenerational pain that was bestowed upon me by the men in my genetic legacy, right? Which was severe alcoholism, severe physical and mental abuse. We're going 3-4 generations back at least. If I can undo that and I cut that cycle, that's enough for me, right? Where my children have never experienced that. There's a lot more, but that's a big one, right? That's what I wanted to do first. Now that, you know, so far so good in terms of my children know that I love them and, you know, I'm very soft with them. I can be, you know, I'm the disciplinarian, I think, in the family, but it's very different discipline than I experience. Right. That's for sure, mm-hmm. right? And then going from there, it's like wonderful experiences. If I'm 80 years old, right, or 90 years old, hopefully, and I'm lying in my rocking chair on my front porch, I want things that make me smile. I don't want regrets, right? Or I spent too much time doing this, and like, why didn't I do that? It's like, now's the time to start building that catalog of file folders that when I'm 90, I can just pull them out and smile and smile and smile and smile and smile. You did a good thing. You did a good thing. That was an amazing experience. Wow, right? Because the last thing you want to do when you're in your final hours is be like, why didn't I do that?
Why didn't I do that?
Or why did I spend so much time doing that?
Yeah.
Right?
It's always the regrets that you look back on. It's never the things that you tried and failed because you at least tried them, but it's the things you didn't try.
And it's like, why don't people listen to what everybody else says, right? Like if you looked at the kind of consensus across the board for men that are on their deathbed, right? I spent too much time working.
Yeah.
Number
you
one.
You hear the same thing every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
Billions of men saying it on their deathbed. Like, why don't we listen?
Didn't spend enough time with family or friends. Didn't travel with the family.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. All those experiences.
So if we don't listen to that now, we'll be thinking the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, we've looked forward. I'd like to look back because now, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Now that you've had these experiences, you've created these companies, and you're still doing it. But if you were to give some self-advice to young Eric, what would that advice be around not only building wealth and building successful companies like you are, but a meaningful life in general? Mm.
That's a really good question. I think I'm fortunate because that's a hard question for me to answer, which means that I'm relatively happy with the decisions that I've made. Advice, it depends on what you want to accomplish in your life. So for me, I wanted to do great things for whatever reason. Whatever my ambition was, it certainly was big, right? And so I said this yesterday, which I think is really important, is it's going to be tough. And the people that fail are the ones who quit. Don't quit. Right? Grind through the challenges because there is another side. And something that someone told me once was, when you're going through hell, keep going, right? Get through it, right? And you will. You know, I say this with my wife, whenever we're having a tough time or she's having a tough time or I'm having a tough time, it's like, it feels so powerful right now because you're in the middle of it, right? But it's not as big as it feels and you will get through it. And I think adversity is probably something that isn't highlighted enough with entrepreneurs and super successful people. Like, I'm also a member of a group called Tiger 21, right? In Tiger 21, there's 1,500 of us across the world, and it's ultra high net worth people, right? So these are the world beaters. These are the guys that make things really happen, right? And we do something called a portfolio defense, which is like, where are our assets? And they kind of rip that apart. And they're like, well, that's a silly decision. Why are you so heavily invested here? And you should probably do this. Here's some insurance ideas. Here's some, you know, just for the betterment of the people in the group in terms of financial success. But there's also the personal side, which is like, I ended up writing about 13 pages of my history as to, you know, why I got to where I was. And there was not one, and I've seen about eight of them now. I've been there for 8 months. I've seen eight portfolio defenses and these qualitative components to these wildly successful people. Every single one of them has at least one hardship of bankruptcy or of devastation in their family life, right? And the ones that come out on top are the ones that overcome it.
They didn't quit.
They all have it,
right?
Yeah. Every single one of them. There's no one who's just sitting back and be like, oh, it was easy breezy, right?
Right.
And that's how the media portrays it, right? It's like success overnight. And I'm like, no, man, that's a fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like with the podcast, so many people over the years, and someone asked me to help them with the podcast. I nerd out, Al knows, and I will help them. I'll spend time that I don't have to help them. And then they stop at six episodes.
Yeah.
To your point, you can't quit. And they look at our podcast as being downloaded on a global scale at this point. We just had our first event where I was handing out awards, Eric, and it was a surreal moment to think, oh, I'll start a podcast.
How long ago did you start?
A couple of years now, before COVID, time goes quick.
We used to do it this way in our office.
And then we went virtual, of course.
So that tells you.
But it's,
you know, 5 years,
six
years.
But we didn't quit. And I knew, to your point, I knew from day one, didn't know what I was doing, had no idea, but I knew I was not going to quit because I knew in my gut, I didn't know what it would exactly look like, but here we are today and I'm sitting with someone like yourself. So I'm glad I didn't quit.
I am too.
Right?
Yeah.
Can we go back to something that you brought up that I think is really important, and I'm sure other people experience it, but I think people from a martial arts background in particular face it on the mats, and that's adversity. And I've told people in the past, the one thing I always liked about training in jiu-jitsu, and I'm since retired and I focus my efforts, that energy elsewhere now, mostly into business. But I liked the fact that from the moment I would step on the mats, there was always someone that I couldn't just relax. There was always someone who was more skilled, putting you in danger. You had to defend yourself. And I always felt that it really builds character. And facing adversity, and now the way I face adversity is 5:45, my alarm goes off, and I got to get my butt in the gym. Right? That's my adversity. But especially in the martial arts day, and I know you have a boxing background, but can you just talk about why adversity is important for the person that you became?
I'd love to talk about why adversity is important, if it's okay, just in general.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a friend of mine from England, but a high school buddy, kind of came back for a few weeks to visit. And we had the same discussion, which is, you know, we've got a society and we've got some children and we want what's best for our children. We want to make their lives easier than our lives, right? But if we look at the Canadian economy right now in terms of productivity, it's the worst it's been ever, okay? And there's a reason for that. It's like, what are we doing with our kids? What are we doing with the next generations? What adversity do they have? Everything is available, all resources, more money, parents spoil them more. It's all like we're building lackadaisicalness, we're building laziness, there's no drive, there's no urgency, there's no adversity. And so how do we build that into our children's lives now, right? How do we build them? And I think, listen, sports is important, but combat sports where there's real risk, real fear, right? That's important, right? And I think that builds champions, right? People who have to overcome that adversity. For me, you know the story, Robin, but for me, I was bullied. I'll keep it real simple. I was bullied by an extremely tough boxer in high school and tried to be his friend, tried to manipulate the situation as smart as I thought I was. I just could not get out of it, right? And the only thing that I could do at that point, I was like, I have to learn his game and I have to get better at his game than him and I have to beat him, right? And I don't know what it is. Like, maybe some people would just continue to take the beating. Maybe some people would hide. But for some reason, I didn't. And I don't know why. But I say to anyone who's thinking about hiding, don't.
Right? Agreed.
Yeah. Take the shot, right? And lose again, right? And lose again until you win, right? Because you will eventually if you don't give up.
Yeah, such solid advice. And Eric, you and I connected on that because I remember being bullied and I remember being afraid. Mm-hmm. And I hated that feeling mm-hmm. of being afraid. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quit.
Yeah.
I didn't quit, right? And I'm very thankful. Now that I look back, I'm actually thankful that to that person because it pushed me in a direction that has led me to here that we are today.
Yeah,
so I'm sure there's going to be more conversation after we stop recording here today. Eric, I have to say thank you because every time we get together, you've got such great energy. I love hanging out. We're going to continue the conversation over lunch today. If people want to find out more about your story or what you're doing with your companies, what's the best way for people to reach out?
I'd say connect on LinkedIn, but I've got a filter on LinkedIn because I get too many invites. So that's probably not the best way unless I give my email address, which I'm not going to do.
Yeah, and definitely don't give your phone number.
Yeah, and I won't give my phone number. So I'd say, look, you can ping me, whether it's like at WorkWolf or at Magnus HRS or Optimal U. There's ways to find me, right? If you really want to find me, then do the work, okay? I'm not going to make it easy for you.
And there you go. And that's the perfect spot to end on. You know, one of the things as we're coming in here today is one of my favorite sayings, you know, the podcast, the idea for success leaves clues. It was a saying I used to sneak into my brother's room and listen to his Tony Robbins CDs and Success Leaves Clues came out of that. But there was another saying I was thinking about as we were driving down here to record this. If a life is worth living, it's worth recording. So my hope is not only will our listeners get to see this and hear this, but I'm hoping you'll share this with your family at some point as well. Because I think they get a real kick of not only now, but perhaps down the road, your kids are going to have this.
Yeah.
Like, that was my dad at this moment in time.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I'm so glad you did this. On behalf of Al and myself, I hope the listeners have enjoyed this as much as we have. We've seen it today very clearly, my friends. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome. Thanks.